Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Joanne Olsofsky to the broadcast. Joanne is the Vice President and Chief Information Officer at BNSF Railways, a Class 1 railroad that is part of Berkshire Hathaway. In her role as CIO, she's responsible for delivery of BNSF's telecommunication services, data center infrastructure, application development, web presence, and all other information technology services. Prior to joining BNSF Railway in 2006, Joanne was Director, Enterprise Network Services and Technology Support Services at Verizon Communications and pre-merger at GTE. Prior to her time at GTE, Joanne spent 13 years at AT&T, where she led technology planning, engineering, and operations teams. Joanne serves several organizations and chairs various committees, including Rail-Link Board of Directors, AT&T and IBM Customer Advisory Councils, Fort Worth Hispanic Chamber Board of Directors, and TCU's Neely School of Business Advisory Council. Joanne has a BA in Business Management and an MBA, both from Nova Southeastern University, and an MA in Project Management from George Washington University. I recently spoke with Joanne in her office in Fort Worth, Texas, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed the ways in which IT brings to life BNSF's many priorities, as well as the methods she's used to learn about the railroad industry after spending most of her career in telecommunications, as well as a variety of other topics. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by Red Hat, the world's leading open-source solutions provider. Learn more at redhat.com. Joanne Olsofsky, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, Joanne, I wonder if you could take a moment to talk a bit about Burlington Northern Santa Fe, BNSF, and your role as Chief Information Officer.
Sure, I'm more than happy to. Burlington Northern Santa Fe, known as BNSF Railway, actually, is a railroad predominantly in the western portion of the United States. We're kind of everything west of the Mississippi, if you will. We have about 32,000 route miles of track. We have four key business units. We have our consumer products division, which many of you probably are familiar with from the intermodal work that we do. We have an industrial products division. We have a coal franchise, actually, and we also have an agricultural franchise. BNSF is about before pre-recessionary times, I guess we were about an $18 billion company with about $17 billion last year. We have probably 40,000-ish employees scattered throughout the United States. From a technology services perspective, at least that's what we refer to our information technology team as a technology services. We have roughly about 1,500 people that in IT that support the railroad, and we have about 2,700 locations that we actually have our employees working out of that we support from a network perspective and from an applications and system perspective.
That's great. And it's interesting that since this is one of the oldest industries in America and one of the oldest companies, in fact, in the U.S., one might be tempted to think of this as a low-tech business of one sort or another. But given the very complex logistics of managing all the locomotives and cars and settling payments with customers and other railroads as you're handing off cars between them, just to name a couple of different areas in which technology is involved, it's obviously a very complex technology operation. Can you talk a little bit more about how IT brings to life some of business's bigger priorities?
Sure, more than happy to. You know, it's really interesting that no matter where I go and whoever I talk to, people generally want to assume that the railroad is not high-tech at all, and in fact is low tech, if you will, but we really rely on technology quite a bit. We can't move trains unless we have voice data. You know, we have video systems throughout our railroad, wireless networking, GPS, mapping services, systems that are required to move trains throughout our railroad from a dispatch system to transportation systems. We have track geometry systems. We have a really extensive network infrastructure, if you will, because if you would imagine, we almost have a mini phone company, and the fact that we have to be able to communicate to our trains throughout our 32,000 route miles of track, no matter where those trains are, they require voice and data. And like I said, we have video systems throughout the railroad. So We rely quite heavily, actually, on technology in order to keep our trains moving. Even from a logistics management perspective, if you can imagine the volume in terms of the cars that we have to transport, whether it's coal products or agricultural products, or it's the lumber or the drywall or the, you know, materials you might find at your local hardware store, or your local home improvement store on the weekends, you know, most of that is moved via rail.
Yep. And I also was interested in learning more about the industry to find out the degree to which there's collaboration even in the industry from a technology perspective, given all the needs for handoffs. Could you take a moment to talk a bit about that?
Sure. So in the rail industry, it's really an interesting model and quite unique. You know, many people just assume that, you know, the other rail carriers are our competitors. And I guess in one sense they are, because we certainly vie for the same business. But in another sense, it's a cooperative nature, because maybe on the marketing side, you know, we compete against the same business. But on the operational side, we need to be able to move our freight. We pick up some freight in Los Angeles or Long Beach in California, let's say, and it has to be transported all the way to Florida. We might hand that train off to another carrier in order to make that customer's goods get to the destination that needs to get to. So operationally, we do have to work quite routinely with the other railroads to be able to move freight across the country. And certainly from an IT perspective, that carries some requirements as well, because we would have to be interoperable and be able to allow the trains to work on other railroads' track, use similar systems, be able to communicate. And interoperability is very key for the railroads. You know, you have to meet certain standards in order to be able to ensure our trains can communicate. If you look at the rail industry, you know, we all use the same, you know, cars, we use the same track, we use the same ties, the same rail, we use the same locomotives pretty much. So, you know, really technology then becomes part interoperable requirement, as well as in some cases a differentiator. So, you know, that's why we invest quite heavily into our technology, because it's needed to move the trains. And on the other hand, it becomes a differentiator because it helps to drive the efficiency of our business.
That's great. It certainly is an unusual dynamic in this industry compared to others. I wanted to move on to some of the bigger news in the company from the past year or so. One of the biggest developments clearly has the acquisition of BNSF Railways by Berkshire Hathaway. And I wonder, how has this changed how you operate, if at all?
Yeah, that was certainly some great news for the BNSF Railway last year. In fact, we hit our one-year anniversary of being a Berkshire-owned affiliate as of February of this year. And it's been just a great experience. Warren Buffett, you know, what can you say? My few limited exposures that I've had to him since we've merged has been just absolutely wonderful. He has spoken to our leadership team. He impresses upon us the importance of reinvesting in our railroad and providing great services for our country. So it's just been a really great experience. And he certainly has not changed our railroad, if you will. You know, a lot of times you see companies merging and you see, you know, maybe changes in the leadership. You know, he bought the company for the product services that we provide for our country, the value that he sees, and for certainly the leadership team. And so we really haven't seen any changes in leadership as a result of being acquired. It's actually really been great. Our senior leaders run the company just as they always have. And they have Warren Buffett saying, go do great things. And so what more can you ask for?
That's really great. I was also interested, Joanne, you've worked in the B2C, the business-to-consumer space, and now, of course, you work in the business-to-business space. And I wanted to get your thoughts on differences in operating in these different kinds of environments.
Sure. So I really started my career working for Ma Bell many, many years ago. I was a technician for many years in operations and an engineer, just a different type of engineer, I guess, telephone service, network repair, those sorts of things. And certainly a very operational intensive environment, working for the phone company as well as being in the railroad. You know, so there's some similarities there. Certainly provided actually both B2C and B2B services, you know, with a phone company, because of course you're providing long distance services as well as high capacity, high bandwidth circuits for major corporations, E911 emergency services, you know, all sorts of normal phone company type services. And now being with BNSF Railway, which is definitely a B2B company, there are some differences, I would say, but also a lot of similarities. The operational similarity, as I already mentioned, but there are some complexities being a B2B company. For example, we look at our web services. You know, we have to wear the hat that says we're not a B2C company. What are the types of tools and systems that another company really needs to access from us? Because we really don't have the end consumer looking at our website and trying to figure out what it is, you know, where's my freight? It's not that. It's really the shippers that are looking at our website and trying to figure it out. So we kind of have to wear a little bit of a different hat because we know that it's corporate America that's our customer, as well as people like our coal customers, our agricultural customers. So it makes you look at things in a little bit different light. And you also have to recognize that you have a vast difference from your agricultural customers to some of our largest trucking companies, who are some of our largest partners. They have different requirements as they're accessing data from our site, as would, you know, maybe an agricultural customer or a different type of customer. They all have unique requirements. It's where's my car or where's my entire train, because maybe I'm moving an entire train that's mine. So we're also looking at mobility, because our customers, just like the consumer world, has gone definitely mobile with iPhones and their handheld devices. You know, our customers are doing the same thing. So our ag customers, our coal customers, our intermodal customers, you know, they want to know where's my freight, when's it going to show up. And so we just recently, for example, announced new applications and links that people can use their iPhones or their Blackberries or their Androids or whatever they have, and they can actually track their freight and do certain functions with their handheld and smartphone type devices.
So interesting, Joanne. And I guess in some ways it shows the way in which B2C trends or even personal technology trends are impacting the B2B space.
Yeah, it really is. We hear a lot these days about the consumerization of IT. It used to be, you know, the corporate behavior maybe drove some of the consumer stuff, but it's really the consumer flavor that's bleeding into the corporate world. Many conferences and different events that I go to, and I interact with a lot of other CIOs, and we're all kind of feeling the same way, where we have employees that say, hey, I have better devices at home and personally than what the corporate world is providing me, because they don't have to look at standards necessarily. They, you know, they have their one device or two devices or a few devices that they need to think about. They don't necessarily have to be interoperable. Whereas, you know, in the corporate environment, for example, say I have 25,000 PCs or workstations or what have you. Of course, we have to pick standard applications. We have to be able to push to those workstations. We have to make sure they all have virus protection. We have to make sure they have encryption and all these sorts of things. Whereas consumer space, you don't necessarily have that worry for 40,000 or 20,000 or whatever thousand amounts of computers. You have your own smartphone. So it makes it a little less complicated and a lot easier for them to do that. But that is definitely a challenge. And I really think that we're going to see a huge wave and a huge change in how companies actually manage the computer environment. And I think you're going to see a lot more tablets, a lot more always-on type devices, and applications changing in the way that they're designed. And we've already seen a lot of that over the last, you know, many years, right, where most applications in your corporate space, you access it through a browser. You know, you're not actually launching the application outside of the browser image. You know, you're rendering a lot of applications through a browser. And many years ago, they predicted that the browser is really the only thing you're going to ever need to launch. And we're slowly but surely getting there.
Really, really amazing. As you mentioned, you came from the telecommunications industry, and just hearing you speak, you can tell the advantage that you have in many ways of being able to piece together your experiences, not only as somebody who's personally interested in technology, but somebody who's operated in the B2C space and translating some of that into B2B. But I wanted to ask you a bit about learning about this business. It is a very different business from ones that you've dealt with, and frankly, probably very different from any other industry. How did you go about learning the railroad business, as well as engendering the trust of your colleagues outside of IT?
Yeah, it's really been a great experience. And I joined BNSF just 5 years ago, almost actually. And I joined as the AVP for telecommunications, because I mentioned, you know, earlier we have kind of a mini phone company. And so that was a really great job for me to hire into with my telecom background and spending a lot of years in networking. So I joined as the AVP of telecom. And one of the things that I did when I first got here is I ordered a pair of steel toe boots, got my hard hat, got my safety gear, and I went out on the railroad. And so I was on this mad fury to just really learn how this company operates and how it runs, and get to know my internal users and my internal customers, if you will, and learn how they operate, what their needs were, and how we could help them from an IT perspective. And I would just say there's no better way to learn a business than to just get out there in it. I had a former CIO that gave me that advice many years ago, and he was most correct when he gave me that advice, because you really learn how the business runs, how efficient or inefficient, or how you can add technology to what they do, because they know what they're doing in their day-to-day processes, but you have the advantage of knowing technology and how you could apply a technology solution to that business process to hopefully make it more efficient and solve some of their problems. You know, we would go out in the field and we would find that maybe we had some network issues and some coverage issues, or maybe we could automate a process for our customers. And it's just been a great experience just to get out on the railroad and to kind of learn how it runs. And I would just say I've only been here a few years, but I certainly don't know a 1/100th of what my brethren know that have been here for many, many years. So I rely on a lot of their expertise as well, and ask for their opinions and their insights on what things could help them from a technology perspective. And so I've worked really hard to foster some good relationships. This is really a great place to be. I have to say, it's the most incredible company. Culture is wonderful. The people are wonderful. And from day one coming here, I had people knocking on my office door, coming over to me and just saying, come here, I want to teach you about the railroad. And they're just so eager to teach you about railroading and how it affects the country, how our processes work, how we need to move freight, and how you can help us and how we can help you. And it's just been a very welcoming society, I have to admit.
That's really wonderful. What a special thing to work in a place where people are so passionate about the work that they're doing. Well, good. I wanted to add one final question for you, Joanne. You've begun to talk about some key technology trends, consumerization of IT, mobility. Are there other technology trends that particularly excite you as you look out into the future?
Yeah, for sure. I think we haven't even begun to touch on what you can do with imagery and video. And certainly for the rail industry, I think that there's some good future promise there. I think as you've seen, the handheld devices, how they have just completely evolved. I mean, you look at an iPhone, for example, and, you know, you have more computing power in your smartphones these days than, you know, we had in PCs and computers that filled whole rooms, you know, many years ago. More memory, more storage. And the whole storage industry has just drastically changed things. And so that's where the advent of the whole cloud computing stuff has come from. And I just think that there's a lot to be done even yet in terms of storage and in-memory computing, visualization. I think you're going to see Moore's Law is just really going to take a hold in the next, 5 to 10 years. And I think the whole use of applications on a always-on handheld portable device with wireless, you know, whether it's 3G, 4G, whatever, 5G, 10G, whatever it's going to be in the years to come, you'll have the internet, you'll have networking at your fingertips, you'll have information at your fingertips. I just think this is a great time to be in IT. I hope that anybody's listening to this, that they would consider becoming very active if they aren't already in the school systems and getting kids to think about IT as a technology future, because it really is just a fascinating place to be. I've been able to, be married. I've raised, I'm still raising. I still have a kindergartner, but, 4 boys. I've been able to balance work and home and give back to the community and enjoy all the things that technology has done for the companies that I've worked for, and been able to see how we've been able to make the businesses more efficient and give back to our shareholders. It's just been rewarding. And I think the next 5, 10, 20 years are going to be even more so. So get out into the communities and recruit our kids and get more kids engaged in math and science and think about technology as a career.
What a great place to end the interview, Joanne. An inspiration for us all to go out there and try to recruit the next generation of technology leaders, given all the things we've been talking about that the future holds for IT. Well, Joanne Olsovsky, thank you so much for taking this time on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
My pleasure, Peter. Thanks so much for having me.
The Forum on World Class IT would like to thank Red Hat, the world's leading provider of open source solutions, for being our corporate sponsor. Red Hat uses a community-powered approach to provide reliable, secure, and high-performing cloud virtualization, storage, Linux, and middleware technologies.
To learn more, visit redhat.com. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information about these five principles and sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com. And please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our editor is Chris Davis, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.